A very warm welcome to this World Game Changers podcast, where your host, Paul D. Lowe, embraces many crucial conversations that compassionately contribute towards creating a better life and world. Paul's intention is very simple, to help get people's inspirational insights and motivational messages out into the world so others may benefit.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this World Game Changers podcast episode. New guest today, guys. New guest to get to today. And there's the first deliberate fumble. And, you know, I often do that, sometimes deliberately, to kind of reinforce the authenticity of being in the moment. Because isn't it true that we as humans, we aim for this thing called perfection? And our guest today, a lady from the East Coast of America, a lady by the name of Nicole Belisle, we're going to be challenging conventional thinking of what we should, would, and, you know, we're supposed to do. So a bit of a long-winded introduction there, Nicole, but without further ado, a very, very warm welcome to you, Mom. Gotta say, Mom.
Thank you, Paul. I'm so excited to be here with you. And it feels just right in this point in my life to really be tapping into this idea of challenging conventional thinking. I think it's been a couple decades of experimenting and piloting different ways of doing that. So I'm just so excited to spend this time and dig, you know, see where the conversation goes, really.
Yeah, great. And on a humorous note of this, the label I gave you there of mom, I mean, it's conventional thinking, is it not, that that's attributed to maybe a lady of more senior years. And obviously, you know, our listeners can't see you on this podcast dance that we're having, but I can. And I would venture that you are not of more senior years. So was that title and label of mom a bit kind of out of context, stroke, almost even inappropriate?
Yeah, I'm out of context, perhaps. You know, it's funny. When I get called that, it's mostly in the context of a mother, in, you know, interacting with me in front of a child, right? Or like here in the US, it might be lady. Like, oh, watch out for this lady. Oh. And I'm like, oh, am I a lady? Maybe not yet, but, you know, I'll take it. And so, yeah, it is interesting how we have these labels that do convey something about age or status or even a role that we might be playing as women, as men, as, you know, younger folk even. And it sort of immediately gives a connotation in some direction. And I think sometimes it's not always a direct match to what my self construct is or my self identity, right?
Which for me, Nicole, brings in this intentionality, because we're all different. And I was told many, many years ago that the only thing that really matters is the intent of the person towards you. And so the actual, you know, the refinement of the way they say it, does that really matter? So long as it's said with good heart. And that, you know, kind of speaks to energy as well, doesn't it? Because, and this is my own view, and please challenge my conventional thinking if you deem it appropriate, but words have power, words have energy, but only to an extent. And let me give an example of that. One I've given many, many times before. I could say anything on this podcast, which may or may not be true. In other words, for all of us, words can be used to tell lies. For me, what doesn't lie is energy. And I think there's some kind of relationship between energy, the way we naturally communicate from our soul around, this is my intention, I mean well. And rather than telling you I mean well and trying to kind of paper over it in almost an ego-driven way, let the recipient be the deciding factor on well, your energy's coming across really well. And your words might be a bit clunky, but that don't matter, because the sincerity, the authenticity is there, and that's being conveyed in your energy. Any thoughts, Nicole?
I agree with this in a really big way. And it reminds me of when I travel, and even if there's a language barrier, right, I can understand because of the energetic nonverbal exchange that's happening. So I agree with you that words do hold power. And sometimes I even say words are spells, right? We can use the power of words to tap into something that is really poetic and conveys a powerful message. I mean, we can basically activate crowds. We see this in our political leaders sometimes, of using words to activate the potential of a group, whether it's a politician or a CEO. And yet, at the same time, I do agree that when the words aren't there, or maybe even the words are not authentic, and they're conveying misinformation or a lie, even, you can feel the mismatch between the energetics and the words that are being said, even in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think if we are open and receptive, and if we really learn to trust our own sentient knowledge or sentient intelligence in the body, we can start to pick up on that mismatch if there is authenticity or ill intent. And that type of intuition can really serve us, not only to keep us safe, but also to help us navigate situations that we might find ourselves in. So yeah, I think it sort of goes both ways.
Yeah. And interesting on, you know, let's bring in the energy and the emotion of love. Because isn't it true that a person can feel love? Well, actually not a person, a being can feel love without words. And my prime example of that, a very, very good friend of mine, she's got three cats. The bond and the love between me and her three feline souls is just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And of course, those beautiful feline souls, they can't speak, but actually their silence is just deafening in terms of the connection that we have. You know, there's two males, one of them has got no use of his back legs at all, and there's the one in the middle who's the boss of the trio, female. And you know, oftentimes, particularly the female, and will just come and sit and just stare into my eyes. And there is just that really deep, soulful connection. No words spoken, but there's that knowing that that power, that energy of love is there. Unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can really feel the presence of someone or another living being when they're really with you and present in that moment. And I also I'm remembering times throughout my life when maybe it wasn't the moment to use my words to convey something, but the power of doing that energetically and sort of choosing those moments, I think, has really served over the years. And I'll give you one example. And this is maybe unconventional in a way, but when any company that I've run, I usually do a bit of energy work before my major meetings, or before I'm getting on stage or stepping into an important conversation with someone on my team, maybe a difficult conversation where I know that some challenge or potential conflict is going to arise. And I've been a Reiki master for at least several years, and have been studying Reiki for more than that. I think I first learned it when I was 18. But I would often, before going into those spaces, sit and do a bit of self-Reiki. And then there's something so powerful about the energy that we send out and that we exude from the physical body and fill the space with. Mm-hmm. And I would watch, even in the most tense moments where we're talking about a business potentially failing, or we're needing to fire someone and let them go, and I would just watch the collective nervous system in the room become safe, become regulated because of the energy that I was putting out in the space that I was holding. And I try to do this in my personal relationships too, where maybe even live in the moment, tension or conflict comes up, we're getting into a difficult conversation, I'm so used to doing Reiki on the fly that I can just sit there and do it and no one even knows. It doesn't look any different from the outside, but my body is completely going through a transformation. My breath is deepening. I am grounding through my grounding cords and my feet, and I'm essentially becoming bigger and quite honestly becoming more love. I'm bringing more love into the field and inviting others by default to do the same. And I think this really changes the outcomes of our interactions and allows us to go to spaces in conversation and in interactions that maybe we wouldn't otherwise. It sort of expands where the edges are, whether that's business or relationship. And so, yeah, time and time again, I've just seen the power of playing with this energy and with this presence.
Mm. Listening to you speak there brought to mind something that's quite prominent in my consciousness around this, just frame it as chicken and egg situation. Is the energy changing so profoundly externally within our world, or is it as elements of that? And, you know, there is obviously the together as one. So the outer is the inner and the inner is the outer, almost the yin and yang, if you will. But I play with this quite a lot of the world. You know, for me, the world is changing dramatically externally. Now, is that because, Nicole, that I'm changing, or is it because the external is changing me, or is there a sweet spot in the middle?
I think about this a lot, and I think where I've landed is I really believe it's happening simultaneously. And I also find it very interesting to confirm with the other person or the other people in the room if they felt the same shift, because I also find that if I'm changing my inner landscape and my internal environment energetically or by bringing awareness to my thoughts and asking questions, right? Like really questioning, is that a story I want to keep telling myself? Because if I do, that's how I'm going to see the world. That's how I'm going to see other people. If it's not a story I want to keep, let me shift the story in my head and then let me see the world differently. So I think part of it can be this simultaneous shift of inner and outer energetics. And part of it, I believe, is also my shifting perspective. I'm literally, it's as if I'm changing out my pair of glasses that I'm wearing through which I'm seeing the world. And I'm saying, no, in this moment, I'm gonna activate the energy of love and compassion. And I'm actually gonna put on this different vantage point. And I'm gonna see others and I'm gonna see this situation through a completely different lens and then see what's possible in this field. And that lens might impact how I interact and what I say and what questions I ask. And it really, you know, I guess that's the question mark for me, right? Is like, did that shift then impact the external, or did I go in and feel comfortable enough to create this love because of my external environment? And now the whole thing's cooking in a different way. So it's a really fun question to play with. And so, I mean, ultimately, I guess I can't know, but that's my experience anyway, is that it feels simultaneous. And some groups will say like, oh yeah, you know, when you said that, or when we, you know, when we shifted into that topic, something really changed in the room or really changed in the conversation. And so confirming with these other observers, these other conscious beings in the conversation is also fascinating.
There's a kind of paradox to be had really in this. I almost kind of flirt with Taoist philosophy on this, that, the story we tell ourselves, and it's massive, isn't it? It's massive on a human construct level, the story we tell ourselves. But I just wonder, in the essence of pure consciousness, there is actually no story to be told, is there? Because everything just is. And there's this constant dance, isn't there?
True.
You know, we spend this time in in solitude and silence and just being and just observing the clouds or the sun, the metaphoric clouds. Because the way I personally embrace it, Nicole, which has taken me, so it's not some just some nice fancy theoretical philosophy for the sake of having a nice conversation. It's something that's actually taken me from pain to peace. But my story is one of, you know, the use of a metaphor of the sky, infinite, open, expansive, pure. And within that sky, experiences happen, and they may present in the form of, polarizingly, a cloud, a big, dark, heavy cloud, or the sunshine. And which is the preference? Either, neither, and both are okay, because they're only passing experiences. Both will come and go. And I feel that within that solitude and silence, part of my role, and that makes it my role, I mean, there's almost kind of that flirt with the ego there. Oh, you've got a role, have you, Paul? I mean, there's this constant dance, isn't there, between this real kind of witnessing of what's playing out in life's experiences versus, but they're just passing clouds or the sun in the sky and they're just, you know, what's happening? They're just stories. And I think this, certainly what I've learnt over the years, and, you know, and it's a constant thing. I mean, it's, I don't, you know, I would never, ever be so egotistical or arrogant or even presumptuous for that matter to say I've got it mastered. Because I think the epitome of being in the moment is you just don't know what's going to present next.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they say that, you know, change is the only constant, right? So it not only is it unpredictable, but it's ever moving. And yet as humans, I do think we love to attach meaning to something. We love to label with our words what something is. And the minute that we label it, we form a relationship with it, whether it's negative or positive. And we're sort of just constantly doing this. And I believe that story is also how we build culture and how we build a shared understanding of our cultural norms, the rules that we play by, whether it's the rules of relationship, the rules of engagement in business. And we tell ourselves over and over again what these agreements or these rules are, to the point that they start to feel real and they start to shape what we believe we can and cannot do. And then suddenly we're living inside of a construct that we have effectively created, because the great myth that we live in now, the cultural agreements that we live in now, or as I've heard, you know, recently I had a guest on my podcast who actually called these cultural delusions, which I thought was really quite apt, you know, especially for certain things in our culture right now that just feel way off base or like they don't have to be true. And certainly like they haven't always been true, because these things also aren't permanent. Humanity has had many, many iterations of culture where we've been prototyping and piloting different versions of this. And you don't have to look very far. You can look back to indigenous community and indigenous culture to see different ways of doing marriage, of doing community. And we find ourselves in this Western mindset right now that really tells us a certain story to live inside, but that's also not the only reality or the only worldview that's activated even at this time on the planet, right? There are other ways of being that are happening simultaneously across different timelines or however you want to think about it. So I find this fascinating that it's sort of like you said, the either or, the both and neither existing at the same time, because life is unfolding and we don't need to attach meaning to that. It's just happening. It's just unfolding. It's in ever constant motion. And yet the power of story to shape our reality and what we believe is equally as profound in a way. And I am constantly sort of shifting between the non-attachment and the attachment. And it changes my worldview. So I don't know if that, you know, how that lines up with your experience, or what you've seen in the power of storytelling. But yeah, it's quite a profound paradox, to use the same word that you did.
I think the litmus test, and feel the litmus test more importantly, Nicole, and it is, where am I spending most of my time? In what space?
Yes.
That's the litmus test, isn't it? You know, am I angry, frustrated, in a dark place? Or am I, you know, kind of almost laissez-faire about life? You know, letting life happen through me instead of to me. And for me, I've found that certainly when life was happening to me and I was in victim mode, you know, creating a story, because there's great significance in victimhood, isn't there? There's great significance.
There is.
You know, and sort of flipping over to Robbins' six human needs model, which has been a phenomenal stepping stone in my journey. You know, from that more concrete, I need to make sense of this, just to pick up on the thread that you alluded to earlier on. You know, we've got to have, there's got to be a concrete stepping stone, hasn't there? This has got to make sense. And if it doesn't, then, you know, our little friend up here called the mind, well, he or she has a field day. You know, and I've recently experienced this in you know, with a kind of experience of a relationship. And it, you know, for a few seconds, it actually did my head in, just for a few seconds. But luckily, you know, because of the journey I've been on, I had that awareness to say, hang on, I'm becoming part of the game again. I'm stepping back onto the boards rather than becoming the director of the play. And I think it's that awareness, isn't it, that as with that self-observation that is the key. You know, whether we use the metaphor of the, you know, the infinite blue sky with passing clouds and sun, and of course the sun's always there, but it shows more prominently at different times, of course. But for me, Nicole, it's about this, having this self-observation. What am I witnessing? What story am I telling? But more importantly, how do I feel at this moment in time? Where am I spending most of my energy and my space? That's the litmus test for me. And if I feel good or actually at peace, then yeah, okay. We're in a good place. We're in a good place.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Because what we focus on grows as well. So depending on where we're putting our conscious awareness, it's going to impact what comes next, or what at least what our experience of what comes next is. And so I love what you just said there about, yeah, it's, I feel like we could talk for hours about this in, you know, particularly of just how to become unattached from the story, how to get out of victimhood even, because we lose access to our power when we're running that story. So sometimes I think of it as a program that's running, and it's been interesting over the years to come up with the strategies or the practices that allow me to even notice what story am I running. Is there a part, right, to reference parts work as another example, that has just gotten in the driver's seat, right? Like my inner critic or my inner child. Is there a part of me that just got in the driver's seat of my experience and is running the show? And what you said in the example of being the director or in the play, I think is so useful, because at any given time, we are both the observer, the creator, whatever we want to call it, and the consciousness that is experiencing whatever is at hand and being experienced. And to be both, to be able to access both of those vantage points, has taken a long time, actually. And I find that in the most difficult conversations where my, you know, my reptilian brain or my ego or a scared part within activates and sort of takes over my body, right? Takes over my nervous system even. If I can still maintain access to the observer and say, okay, I'm having a visceral triggering experience in my body in this conversation, and becoming aware of that part, getting in the driver's seat, that has been such a game changer to be able to then convey even to the other person in a conflict or in a difficult conversation to say, hey, I'm witnessing myself, I'm witnessing my body having this reaction, and I'm increasingly feeling less and less safe. You know, can we take a pause? Can we take a breath? Can we come back to this later? Or maybe even expressing a need that I might have to help my nervous system feel safe. You know, whether that's getting outside for a second, having a glass of water, asking, you know, a partner to give me the reassurance that that I'm still safe, that this relationship is still a priority, that it's okay to be triggered, and that doesn't mean that they're gonna run away or see me differently. It's the emotional experience that I'm having is actually fully welcome. You know, sometimes I need to hear even things like that, so that the power of maintaining that observer is so, so critical. And yet it probably took me decades even to really develop access to that. And it's something I'm still working on, even in moments of difficulty or triggers, really.
That leads us nicely into the topic of relationships. And let's approach this, if we may, Nicole, from a really broad perspective, because you and I have spoken off air about, you know, how we'd, as part of our story, how we'd like to shape this and take this, obviously, you know, not only for our dance, but, you know, for the benefit of listeners as well. But if we can start from a really broad relationship perspective, because I feel that we already actually have already done that by talking about relationship with self. And that's critical, isn't it? You know, that relationship we have with the self, you know, and even that all important question, who am I? And yet again, Nicole, listeners on previous episodes have heard me consistently say, well, maybe a better question as part of our story is actually not who am I, but who am I becoming? Because we're transient all the time, aren't we? We're transient all the time. Even to the point where, and I've seen this kind of within memes on social media, that I'm not the same person I was 10 seconds ago.
Seriously,
you know, so, well, okay, well, I've 10 seconds ago I had no hair and I've still got no hair. Yeah. And I'm sure my bank balance is exactly the same or whatever, but yeah, any thoughts around that, you know, sort of opening this up now into starting to get focused around the general, well, actually the very, very broad umbrella of that word. One simple word, but massive connotations, relationships.
Yeah, well, I feel like the framing that you just had there is spot on, because it's hard enough to be an ever evolving individual within the relationship to ourselves. It is strange sometimes to look back and think of these different chapters or these different versions of ourselves, and that we might feel one way now about a job or a person, but we can't know necessarily with 100% certainty that we'll feel the exact same, that we'll be the exact same person in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, let alone, you know, even a week or a month. I've been amazed at how quickly the versions of me evolve. I think especially because I'm, you know, I'm curious, I'm a bit of a rule breaker in the sense that I like to explore the edges of the rules and the bounds of, you know, of our culture and of our society. I like to really question things. So I'm reflected back through my, you know, my closest humans that I change and evolve at a rapid pace. And so, you know, anyone who is close to me knows to be like, what are you learning these days? And, you know, your life changes so fast. Like, what's reality like for you now? Or where are you focused? And they know that they're going to get a pretty different answer than even a week ago. And so I've really embraced this part of myself, but it used to sort of haunt me, or at least present difficulty in the context of relationships with other people, especially romantic relationships, because in the dating culture and all the stories that we tell ourselves about romantic partnerships, marriage, family, whatever it is in this umbrella of relationships, even what a relationship with a colleague should be or a co-founder, so many stories, so many agreements and rules that we enculturate, really, like that we internalize and turn into deep beliefs, to the point that we will, you know, we will fight sometimes to the what feels like fighting to the death for these rules. And I would find myself in these situations where I would be pretty deeply invested in a romantic relationship. You know, I was engaged at one point, on the path, on the track for moving towards a committed lifetime monogamous relationship with an individual that at the time I thought was, you know, a great fit, at least to start. And then once I was inside that relationship for a long enough period of time, I started to realize, wow, I don't know that in full integrity and in full authenticity that I can promise that I'm gonna feel the same way about this relationship and about this person for the rest of my life. Like, I've, you know, I can look back and see that every like 1 or 2 year cycle, I am in a new chapter of life. I'm expanding and wanting to try new things or have new experiences. And I just found myself in a place where I don't think I can be in integrity in this more traditional agreement, if we can give it that label. And I had to be really honest with him. And I actually called off the engagement about 6 months before the wedding was supposed to take place. Everyone had flights booked and Airbnbs booked already. And we ended up calling it off. And there were a number of reasons for that, which, you know, I'm an open book, so happy to dig into. But
Sorry to cut across you there, Nicole, because what you've done there, you've beautifully warmed it up, because obviously we've had kind of flirted with this conversation off air, and there's a whole episode to be had around this. So humble apologies for cutting short. I want to bring this first one to a close now, this first dance between us, because I think we've laid a very, very solid foundation. We've arrived at a place on this platform called relationships. You've given quite a seductive teaser there in terms of challenging conventional thinking. And that nicely segues into a follow-on episode. But before we do that, and as we close this one out, how can people reach out to you, Nicole, find out more about you, the work you do, your best contact details, etc.?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And I'm already so excited for the next conversation. This has been really, really potent, and invites me to continually evolve, right? Like, I'll be thinking about this until the next one. But if people want to connect, I'm on Instagram at Nicole Belisle. I'm on TikTok under the same username. NicoleBelisle.com is a great place to just get to know the array of what I do in terms of regenerative leadership, cycle syncing, how to work with me one-on-one, or bring your team into a workshop on any of these topics. And then I'm also the founder of a nonprofit called Living Leaders that specifically focuses on regenerative, sustainable leadership practice, and really self-leadership practice. So we get into a lot of conscious practices on how to cultivate the right energy to be the leader that you want to be and have the impact that you want to have. And so you can find out more about that on livingleaders.org.
Beautiful. Well, I use the term, the affectionate term, the well-intentioned term, Mom, at the top of this conversation, this dance. And as I gracefully leave the floor, I say thank you, Mom, Until next time.
Until next time. Thank you so much, Paul.
And I'm going to sign off, listeners, the way I always do, by saying, remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?
Thanks very much for listening to this World Game Changers podcast episode. Hopefully you found it interesting and helpful. Drop a line to Paul at worldgamechangers.org with any thoughts or questions you may have, and he'll be more than happy to respond. Remember, the world's changing. How will you respond?